Part 30, Chapter 5. MacAdam and Baron von Roth were picking up their papers, admiring the signatures, getting ready to leave. Johnny said,
"How did you get those directors in Snotch to pay enough attention to you to listen?"
The Baron boomed a laugh.
"It was the way we started our account. It went all through the bank in seconds. Since the cyclos hogged it, and it was already scarce, gold in the greedities is soaring at 500,000 credits an ounce. We opened our account with gold. Your gold, Johnny. Near a ton of it. We melted it into ingots some time ago. Almost broke our back lugging it into the bank. They hadn't seen that much gold in a century."
Johnny laughed.
"So even Turl's gold came in handy."
"After all that work at the load," said MacAdam, "that gold belonged to you and the crews. We'll bring it home if you want. But it's on exhibit right this minute behind armored glass in what's left of the main foyer of the Galactic Bank in Snotch. Historic gold, Johnny."
"Another thing. What did you do with Kerr that got him to sign those papers?"
"Kerr?"
said the Baron.
"Well, for one thing, he's your friend, Johnny, and we said it would help you. But Stormalong saw your views of Cyclo that night, and he told Kerr it was one dead planet. You never saw such relief. He's always felt hunted by them. So, as the last official planet head, he even had his appointment papers, and they're attached to the deed. He was really glad to be rid of it. We promised him a standard employment contract minus the clause to ship the body home. We let him keep the few 100,000 credits he hooked out of the loot of his predecessor and guaranteed him breathe gas for the rest of his life. I hope we can fulfill the latter."
Johnny thought of the planet, Phobia. Yes, they could pump tons of it into bottles with the transshipment rig.
"No pain. Easy."
Johnny watched them packing up, and then said,
"You two certainly did a brilliant job. Really extraordinary."
They grinned at him.
"We had a good example. You."
"But how did you know to word that intergalactic sale contract that way for Turl to sign?"
MacAdam laughed.
"When Brownlimper Staffer tried to use it to secure his new currency issue, we saw that it wasn't a legal contract. Turl had even tried to forge his own signature."
He had a copy of the original, and it was a ridiculous mess.
"So the Baron and I got to thinking. It had been nearly 11 months since you sent those bombs to Cyclo, and there had been no counterattack. If Cyclo were gone, then, according to Kerr, there wasn't much chance of other mining planets having enough breathe gas left. They'd all be dead."
"So we took a banker's chance and worded it so that it was valid either way."
"And there's one additional reason, knowing how you operate. If you set out to destroy Cyclo, which you did, we put our bets on the fact that you had really done it. And we were right."
"You can't go very wrong putting your chips on Johnny,"
said the Baron. He hitched a stack of documents under his arm and picked up a bulging briefcase, looking around to see if they had everything.
"Then we're all set."
"Oh, no, we're not,"
said Sir Robert. His tone was so positive and censorious that they stopped and looked at him, startled.
"I think that it's a wee bit disgraceful the way you use this poor lad."
I don't understand,"
said MacAdam, shocked.
"You use his picture on Earth currency. You use his energy and ideas to further your own ends. You own the bulk of 16 universes. You're now plotting to put his face on galactic money, and here he is, poor as a church mouse. Why, he doesn't even collect his own pilot pay that I know of. I know you're gonna lend him money for a factory, but what's that? Just a plan to get him in debt? You should be ashamed of yourselves."
And he meant it. He couldn't have had more effect on MacAdam and the Baron if he'd shot them with a stun gun. Johnny had tried to stop Sir Robert the moment he had gotten an inkling of what the old Scot was saying. Johnny didn't think he needed any money. If he was hungry, he could always go out and hunt. But Sir Robert's hand had stopped him. The Baron looked at MacAdam, and MacAdam looked at the Baron. Clearly, they were two very puzzled men. Sir Robert just kept on glaring at them. It was very uncomfortable. Finally, Sir Robert said,
"You might at least give him a little payment for using his picture."
Suddenly, a light seemed to dawn on McAdam's face. He dropped his bundled documents on the table and began to rifle through a near-bursting attaché case. He found what he was looking for and, holding it, sat in a chair before them.
"Oh, Johnny, Johnny, please forgive us. It's plain you don't know."
He began to open up some documents.
"When you never mentioned it, we thought you didn't want it known."
McAdam was holding out the information announcement of the charter of the bank.
"The Earth Planetary Bank was chartered by the original valid 30 Chief Council. This was the information sheet that was released about it."
He took the second document he held and opened it.
"But this is the actual charter, as passed. The actual charter is the only one valid under law, and the Baron and I have wondered many times why they were different. But do you remember who was sometimes acting as secretary of the original council?"
The information sheet on the charter mentioned only McAdam and Baron von Roth. The Baron and McAdam looked at each other and in chorus said,
"Brown Limper Staffer."
"For reasons of his own, he miscopied the resolution for public release. We stupidly thought you didn't want it disclosed."
He opened up the original charter, and there at the top, ahead of the names of Baron von Roth and Andrew McAdam, was the name, bright and clear, Johnny, good boy, Tyler.
"Haven't you ever noticed? We always try to ask your opinion of any big deals,"
pleaded the Baron, very contrite.
"You were doing so many things more important that we just carried on. But, Sir Robert, this lad is the owner of a third part of the Earth Planetary Bank, by charter."
The Baron said to Sir Robert,
"Johnny now owns 2/9, or about 22%, of the Galactic Bank, and 1/3 of Intergalactic Mining Company."
He turned to McAdam.
"Maybe we should make it more."
McAdam looked at Sir Robert.
"Did you think we would leave the poor lad, as you call him, out in the cold? He also owns part of that ton of gold. And altogether, you'd need a computer to add up his money. It's in the quintillions. He's the richest poor lad these 16 universes have ever seen, including the late Emperor of Cyclo."
Sir Robert let go of Johnny and suddenly began to laugh. He punched Johnny in the shoulder.
"Get along with you, you church mouse in disguise."
He looked at the others.
"Aye, gentlemen, I'll let it be and say enough's enough. Just barely, mind, just barely. Say,"
he added,
"maybe you should go out there and buy him half a dozen of those fancy lords for his gillies."
"He already bought them, down to the last bobble in their boots."
All but Johnny boomed out laughter. His head was going round. Quintillions? The number was unreal. Maybe he could buy one of those woven leather lead ropes for Windsplitter, or buy some new furniture if Chrissy had lost all hers. The thought of Chrissy hit him. He had been keeping it suppressed so he could keep on going. McAdam and the Baron collected up their things again and walked out, shaking their heads and muttering,
"Brown Limper."
And
"May trouble clear to the end."
A wailing, petulant voice cut into the room, and Sir Robert looked up. Stormalong was behind two Russians at the room entrance, who were stolidly blocking him out of it.
"Sir Robert, please come out here. I've had a dispatch that's been waiting for you for hours and hours and hours."
Sir Robert pushed past the Russian guards and vanished. Johnny sat there, a little bit spent, trying to get oriented to what the rush of events added up to, trying to decide what he should do now. He made up his mind. Nothing was holding him here. He would go out and get a plane and get to Scotland to help. He grabbed his helmet off the floor. The two Russians at the door parted to let him through. He collided with Sir Robert. The old Scot was standing there, a written message in his hand. He was crying and laughing all at the same time. Sir Robert pushed the dispatch into Johnny's hand.
Ah, weel, 'tis quite a mess. But Johnny the old rock protected them all.
Edinburgh. They had gotten through the last tunnel at dawn today. They were half-starved, some injured, all in a state of greater or lesser shock. But they had gotten them out. All 2,100 of them. Johnny felt dazed with relief. There were no specific names mentioned in the radio dispatch. He stumbled out into the bowl, meaning to go to ops. There was someone across the bowl, someone covered with dust, but wearing the domed helmet they used in high-speed flying. It was Thor. Thor was beckoning to him gladly. Thor shouted,
"Look who we got here for you, Johnny!"
Somebody was rushing toward him. She threw her arms about him, crying his name.
Oh, Johnny!
It was Chrissy.
Johnny!
Gaunt and pale, her black eyes flooding with tears.
Oh, Johnny! Johnny!
She was saying,
"I'm never gonna leave you again. Never! Hold me, Johnny."
Johnny did. He just stood there, almost crushing her ribs. He held her for a long time. He couldn't talk.